You're listening to Tim Talks, Taking Interest in Ministry, a conversation between two great friends with over 70 years of ministry between them. Ministering on opposite sides of the border, Dr. Al Stone is the General Director of Bearing Precious Seed Canada and Pastor Emeritus of the Bible Baptist Church in St. Thomas, Ontario, Canada, while Pastor Dan Wolven pastors the North Columbus Baptist Church in Columbus, Ohio. Listen now as Al and Dan review and relate their experiences in hopes of helping others who are taking an interest in ministry. Now, here is Tim Talks.
Welcome to Tim Talks. With me today, a dear friend, longtime friend, confidant, just a great guy, Brother Mike Ailstock, Dr. Mike Ailstock. Good to have you with us on Tim Talks.
It's great to be with you today, Al.
It's good to see you.
Yeah.
It's good to be together again. It's been a while.
It's been a few years.
Yeah, it's been good.
Always
it's
good
been,
to
it's
catch
good to
up.
It's good to be apart from you. Mike, I want you to tell our listeners today, I want you to give the introduction of who you are. You had pretty incredible things happen to you in the first part of your ministry, and I want you to share with our folks what it is that God did in your life in those first few years of ministry.
Well, Al, I was raised in a good, godly Christian home and a good church that emphasized missions and ministry. Grew up watching missionary slide presentations, had a desire in my heart for God to use me, and was willing to be a missionary or whatever God wanted me to do and surrender to that. Off to Bible college, came out of Bible college not really ready to plant a church, struggling to know how to get experience, how to grow up, how to get from a college student to ministry, and winded up in the state of Maine. And my father-in-law saw that I was just paddling my wheels. I wasn't getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. Running in circles. He came down after I'd been there for about 6 months, and he challenged me to come to Canada and plant a church.
Wow.
And so we prayed about it, and he knew of a place that was in need of a church to be planted and challenged me to pray about it. And we did, and we came to St. Thomas, Ontario, Canada.
Hey, wait a minute. That's where I was.
You were in St. Thomas?
Yeah. Folks, this
can't see that.
This is Dr. Mike Ailstock. This is my predecessor. This is the gentleman that started the Bible Baptist Church in St. Thomas 44 years ago.
Yeah.
And a man that I am greatly indebted to, who allowed me the opportunity to build upon the foundation that he had set. And I've got an opportunity to be in Virginia with Mike this week. And I wanted you folks to know the story of how we got started, because it's such a neat thing. You're a very young man. How old were you when you came to St. Thomas?
I was only about 23 when we came to St. Thomas. And I look back at that time in my life, and I realized how unprepared I was.
Yeah.
And how naive I was. And we went, and my father-in-law kind of gave me some direction and encouragement and mentored me, and we hit the ground running. But I can remember the first door we knocked on in St. Thomas. My wife and I knocked on the door, and a big old guy came to the door and answered the door. And I looked up at him, and I said to him, I said, "Sir, if you died today, do you know where you'd go?" And he said, "No." And I said, "That's really good." And I turned around and walked off. I didn't know what to do. I was so unprepared.
Now, that's soul winning, right? That's how to build a church right there.
I was wet behind the ears.
Oh, man.
Al, I can actually remember times where I would, it was visitation time, and my wife thought I was out of visitation. And I was sitting in my car at a park in St. Thomas crying. I didn't know what to do.
Wow.
And I didn't know how to get the help I needed. And it was a very difficult struggle.
Yeah.
I'm the perfect example that God can do something with anybody.
Wow.
Because I was the least likely to succeed.
Yeah.
And God allowed me to get some experience the hard way. Struggling through.
I know that park.
Yes.
I've been there too. I've wept there too. What am I doing here? Amen. I was much more mature. That's, I think, maybe what the Lord allowed me. I was more mature. I was 25 mm-hmm. when I got there. Yeah. So 2 years between us. But yeah, and I think you've just told the story of a lot of young men.
Yes.
And I think especially back in that day, back in the 70s, 80s, where there was such a huge push and urgency to build churches that we did put a lot of young men out that weren't really equipped.
I think that's true.
They had a lot of heart, but they didn't have the equipment they needed. And mm-hmm. I think we've tried to rectify that over the years. But yeah. But I'll tell you, having said that, you know, going ahead now 12, 13 years later, what you had for us there, you know, you had a building for us, you had a parsonage.
Well, we love people.
Yeah.
And even though I didn't know some of the mechanics of how to do what needed, what really could have been done, I love people. And the Lord allowed us to work with some really fine families, mm-hmm. and we were able to put down a foundation. We were able to get a facility you mentioned,
and
a church building, a parsonage, get some infrastructure in place, and we took it to the point where we felt in my spiritual giftedness and who I was as a person, I got it to where I could get it, and God convinced me mm-hmm. that I had gotten it to where I could get it.
Yeah.
And it was time to get somebody to come in with fresh vision that would be able to take it from where it was mm-hmm. and be able to build something mm-hmm. beyond what I could do.
Yeah. And what was funny was a couple things. First of all, I was there and did visitation as, I think I was 12 years old, if I remember, when you met in the school to start Elmdale School.
That's right.
I did visitation for a week to help with that. And then when you moved to the house on Fairview Avenue, I came and did visitation for that as well. My wife and I's first date was at the church in St. Thomas for a preacher's fellowship that you had. And my father-in-law was preaching.
I remember that.
Yeah.
So I remember that.
That was kind of neat. But I felt the exact same way when just, you know, 8 weeks ago, when I turned the church over, I felt like I'd gone as far as I could. When I came to visit, just before we came to St. Thomas, my father-in-law was again preaching, and I just felt that God would have me come there. It was an overwhelming feeling. And I came to you and said, hey, if you ever leave here, you know, would you call me first? And at that time, you said, well, I have no intention of leaving here. I'm not planning on leaving.
Yeah.
And I think it was about 3 months later, you called me on a Sunday night and said, hey, we're leaving the church. And I was sound asleep. I said, well, I'm sorry to hear that. I didn't know who it was. And then in the morning, I realized I called back. But that was neat.
That was something.
Looking back now, what are some things that you left St. Thomas and then came to Virginia
mm-hmm.
and went back to your home church for a while, right?
While I was in college, my mom and dad started going to a new church that had been established. It was only a mile from our house. And so they changed churches while I was in college. Mm. And so when I came back after planting the church in St. Thomas, we came back to a different church than the church I grew up in. It's a great church, and we came back there and worked on staff there for about 5 years. Mm. My father-in-law had started the college there in Simcoe.
Well, let me interject and tell folks that your father-in-law was Dr. Harry Strachan.
Yes.
Who was my pastor, led me to the Lord. And Betty, his daughter, was, you know, in my life as a teenager. Harry, your brother-in-law, was, you know, one of my best friends growing up. And so we kind of have that tie together, too.
Yeah.
So go ahead from there.
Well, in 1978, when Dad Strachan started the college, mm-hmm. He gave me the opportunity to teach one day a week. And so I would drive over one day a week, and for 10 years, from 78 to 88, for 10 years, I taught in the college. So when I left the ministry in St. Thomas and came back to my home area here in Virginia and to the church that my mom was at the time, they had a college as well. And so I integrated into that and was helping to prepare preachers and missionaries for ministry.
Hmm.
And I love college work, and it was just a great time in my life. I was able to teach every week, and that went on for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And it was during the latter part of that 5 years that I just knew that I needed to be back in the pulpit, that God was stirring the nest. He was stirring my soul to preach every Sunday, more than just teaching in college, but to also be back in the pulpit.
Yeah. You were one of my professors in college.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And then when I went to St. Thomas, when you left, they asked me to come and teach at the college. It definitely not to the same level as they had.
I don't know about that.
You are. I'm going to say this, and I would say it if you weren't here. You are a great teacher in college. You should be teaching in a college. And if you're listening today and you have a college or know somebody looking for a professor, still pastoring, but Dr. Elstock, you are great. You were a great teacher. You were my favorite teacher. I actually learned something in your class. You stayed awake for most of the classes.
Yeah,
that was really helped. Yeah. We had some professors that struggled with that. But that was awesome. Tell me what you did different in starting the second church that you did from the first. What are some lessons that you learned? And I'm thinking of young preachers that maybe today are thinking about starting a church,
yes,
or have started a church and struggling, going through those same things. What are some things that you would advise today that maybe you learned from that experience?
I would say one of the big things is to be transparent enough with people that you trust that you can get the help you need in the areas of your weakness. We all have blind spots, or we all have weaknesses. We're not all perfect in every area.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage young men to be honest enough with who they are, where they are in life, to be able to ask for help from those who can help them. Of course, when we started the second church, I was 43 years of age.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't plan on starting a second church. The church in St. Thomas had a rough beginning, had a slow start.
Yeah.
And it was difficult on my wife.
Yeah.
And so when I felt that I needed to be back in the senior pastor role and back in the pulpit every week, our ideal was a established church. And we began to look. And I found at that time, this is probably not true now,
mm-hmm,
but back at that time, every church that did not have a pastor had 100 resumes.
Right.
Of youth pastors, assistant pastors, or senior pastors looking for a change. And God began to convince me that I needed to practice what I had taught students in colleges over the years,
mm-hmm,
and that is to go out and pioneer new works.
Mm.
And I had to struggle with that. I had to face the struggle, am I willing to do what I had taught others to do?
Mm-hmm.
God brought me to the place where I became convinced that I did not need to take an existing church,
wow,
that there were churches that needed to be planted. And so we found an area, and God led us to a specific area, and we launched the work, and it was a very different. Of course, the area was very different than St. Thomas, but I was very different.
Yeah.
I was 42, yeah, 43 years of age. I had, yeah, a little bit of experience.
More experience.
And so what I did differently, I've never put it into an itemized bullet list of what I may have done differently. I was willing to acknowledge what my weaknesses were and to look for opportunities that would balance that. Of course, visitation was not the glaring issue that it was when I was in my early 20s and not knowing how to go about visitation work. And so I guess just my maturity would probably be the biggest difference, just the maturity in dealing with people, knowing how to deal with people.
Would you suggest to young men today that they wait a little bit longer to start
a
church?
I would suggest young men to work with a pastor that can mentor them.
Yeah.
Al, when I was in high school, I had a job and I had a car. So that means when I went on church visitation, I often drove other people around for them to visit.
Right.
And then I went to college, and I worked full-time through my college years, and I never was on visitation.
Right.
So I graduated from college. My father-in-law thought Bible college, graduate from Baptist Bible College, certainly,
yeah,
you know, he'll be. But he didn't realize that I was unprepared.
Yeah.
He didn't know.
Yeah.
And I was too proud to admit it. I didn't know how to get help.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I would say young preachers, work with somebody.
Yeah.
Be mentored by somebody.
Yeah.
Make sure somebody takes you under their wing and helps you develop the skill sets necessary to be able to be effective.
the young man that took our church, now my pastor, going back 4 or 5 years, came out of Bible college. And I said, you're struggling with winning people to Christ. You're not winning people to Christ. He said, Pastor, I've never really led anybody to Christ. I said, you went through 4 years of Bible college. He goes, I never did it. They're same kind of circumstances, either working or something, whatever. I think there's a lot of people that come out of Bible college and have no idea how to win people to Christ.
That's probably very
and
true.
And we get it in the classroom, but to go out and knock on a guy's door and have him say no, you don't get that in the classroom.
That's correct.
And I think, you know, as we look at Bible college and some of our institutes, we've got to get back to soul winning. We are not soul winning anymore. And I think that's why a lot of our churches struggle today. We've kind of lost that and need to reteach that in and among our people. So you went from the United States to Canada, and maybe for, you know, we have a number of listeners that are in Canada. Coming from the United States to Canada back then, that was a pretty big step. I mean, that was, you not only started a church, you started a whole new culture. And some of those things. What would you say to somebody who was maybe thinking of coming to Canada, or maybe somebody who's there and maybe they're going through the struggles of being in a different country?
Yes.
What are some of those things that you could tell?
You know, I married a Canadian.
That was the best thing you ever did,
I tell you.
Wow.
That for me personally, that bridged a lot of that.
I married an American.
we're the same but different.
We are. That's why we complimented each other
Years ago, you know the book. Pierre Burton wrote the book, Why We Act Like Canadians.
Yeah.
I didn't read that. It wasn't written when I went to Canada.
Mm.
When I got my hands on that and read that,
yes,
that was profound. That articulated things that I wouldn't have been able to articulate.
It's a must.
And for Americans, yes, it is a must.
Mm-hmm.
I used to joke about the lack of difference. I would say that you know, people would ask me, what do you find different in Canada? And I'd say, well, it's kind of like going from Virginia to New York or from Virginia to Vermont.
Yeah.
It's more of a regional difference than a American-Canadian difference.
Yeah.
That is very shallow and naive in some ways, because there are profound differences.
Oh, yes.
And Pierre Burton's book brought those out.
Mm-hmm.
But I would downplay those differences in many ways. I can also remember saying, people ask me, what's the difference in ministering in Canada versus down south? And I said, really, there's no difference at all. Down south, you invite someone to come to church, and they say, yeah, they'll be there.
Yeah.
When Sunday comes, they don't come.
Right.
And up in Canada, you ask someone to come to church with you, and they say, they're not going to come. And when Sunday comes, they don't come. So really, there's no difference.
No difference.
They don't come in either place.
Somebody's just telling you the truth more quickly.
that's right. That's right. But yeah, there are profound differences, the way people think. And what's important, problem solving, trust.
Yeah.
Trust of government, trust expecting somebody else to take care of things. There are profound differences. I think the glaring consistency in ministry is that we desperately need the Holy Spirit of God to work in the heart of a person, and that is universal. And without the power of the Spirit of God working in the heart of an unsaved person or a person that is not walking with God, the struggles will be somewhat different, but at the end of the day, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Man needs God,
mm-hmm.
and only God can meet that need.
How did Betty do with the transition coming from Canada to the United States? How did that go?
You know, I don't recall there being anything that was specific or pronounced as being a challenge. Again, because I'm American, she's Canadian. My acceptance of her acceptance of me, my acceptance of her family and the way they operated and thought, vice versa with Betty accepting my family and the way it operated, we just, there wasn't a profound difference to us.
Mm-hmm. And she went to school in the States.
She did.
And her dad had preached and traveled in the States a little bit. I think that was a help.
There was a lot of blending.
Yes.
In our experience.
Yes, a lot of blending. And so to make that transition, when I worked in the States, I immediately saw a lot of the difference, and I think we do as Canadians. And I was able to, I think, assimilate into that while still maintaining who I was as a Canadian. But there are a lot of guys, and you would know, a lot of guys that came to Canada the same time as you did who did not stay long and did not make it because they didn't get that. They didn't see that. And I don't care where you go in the world. It's different. It's different than what you're used to. And a lot of guys don't pick up on that.
And when you try to incorporate your past into the new environment.
Right.
When you want to go to Canada and celebrate the 4th of July and wave the red, white, and blue. People are naive to think that that is not offensive and that is not problematic.
Right. And same here. I wouldn't do the same here. We both have a pride in our country and a love for our country, and we're happy to have that, but we don't necessarily want someone else to have that pride of their country in our country.
That's right.
Kind of the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's neat. Your kids grew up in Canada and still have a great affinity for Canada and love for Canada, but they're here in the States. Your kids are serving in the ministry. And one here, Chad here, working with you. Aaron's down in Florida, works for Pensacola Christian College. And Connie, a pastor's wife over in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
That's awesome.
Betty and I have three children, and when we left Canada to come to the States, they were preteens, and it was pretty difficult on Chad, our oldest. He struggled with leaving and coming to the States. It wasn't so much a country change. It was just the fact that he was leaving the place that was home to him. But now they're, of course, all grown up in their 40s with their families of their own. And they love Canada. They feel in their hearts an affinity to Canada and the place of their birth. They were all born in Canada. They love Swiss Chalet.
Oh, yeah.
So they love Smarties.
Oh.
And Fudgios.
Oh.
Double stuffed Fudgios. And so there are foods that are probably the biggest thing that they remember and they feel the tug back to Canada. Whenever we're going to travel to Canada, they want ketchup chips. They want they've got their list of what they want to for us to bring back to them, and it's almost always food related.
They're great kids, and they were a great part of that ministry. Some of the folks that are still at Bible Baptist Church in St. Thomas still very often speak of them and fond memories that they had, both of you guys and of the kids. Well, Mike, I want to say publicly that I appreciate very much your vote of confidence that you had in me in calling me to go to St. Thomas. Obviously, great years for you there, a great life for me there, close to 13 years for you, 30 years for me. Mm-hmm. And we've passed that on to a young man.
Yes.
And if he messes that up, we're going to kill him.
We're going to kill him. You know, Al, I've often said, and I wish I could say that this was done with forethought, but I've often said that I believe a pastor's last major responsibility is to secure the next pastor for the church, to help the church, shepherd the church through the process of finding their next shepherd. And we did that with you.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it. I didn't think through, and it just happened.
Yeah.
But as I look back, I'm grateful to God for allowing that to have occurred, because the 12 to 13 years of work that we invested did not die because I helped the church secure you before I left town. And then you took the church to places I could have never taken the church and accomplished things that I could have never accomplished. We're different. Our skill sets, our spiritual giftedness is different. And you've practiced the same thing. You mentored a man, and you helped the church. You shepherded the church through the process of securing their next shepherd. Yeah. And I think that's awesome. And that is a big part of the success of ongoing ministry and churches not dying.
Yeah. You're in a position now where you're starting to look at the end of pastoring here.
Yes.
And looking for a guy that would maybe come along. If only there was a guy who could follow you, a guy who's free and available, who could take this church to a new level.
I wonder who that could be.
Not me. I cleaned up your mess once, pal. I'm not doing it again. There was no mess to be found at all. I'll tell you, it was awesome. And you left the church in such good shape for me to be able to take that. And some are church planters and some are church builders. And,
yes.
And you did the cement work, the hard work, the backbreaking, groundbreaking, putting the cement in the ground that many people will never see. But without that firm foundation, the walls are not solid. So I had a simple job of simply building some walls and a roof on a building that you had started. So thank you for a firm foundation.
You're a humble man, Al.
No.
God had the right man at the right place at the right time at each stage.
Yeah,
and I'm so proud.
Yeah. Well, I'm
of you.
Yeah.
And what God has done in your life and with your life.
Well, I'm honored.
Great joy in my heart.
Yeah, me too. God bless you.
Thanks.
That's a handshake right there.
Yeah.
God bless you. I love you, man. Thank you very much.
You too.
God bless you. This is Tim Talks. Now it's Tim time. Take what you've heard and apply it. There's some church planners out there today. There's some guys that are afraid to start a church. There's some guys that are trying to build a church. And there's some guys that are coming to the end of their ministry in a church. Some great lessons here today. I'm Dr. Al Stone from St. Thomas, Ontario, Canada, and with me today,
Mike Elstall, Community Baptist Church, South Riding, Virginia.
Dr. Mike Elstall.
Wow. Well, I guess.
You're a humble man, Mike Elstall. God bless you. Have a great day.
Bye now.
You've been listening to Tim Talks, Taking Interest in Ministry, with new podcasts added each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. To learn more about your hosts, Dr. Al Stone and Pastor Dan Wolven, you can visit us at timtalks.com. That's TIIM talks.com.